Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 55, Zoology, Part 2. So as I said a moment ago, I'm going to go further back than Steiner himself chose to go or even needed to go in his discussions with teachers, Lecture 7, in which he first introduced this first of the natural sciences. Now, a question that might arise very openly in a discussion with your parents will be, well, what are you guys working from? Evolution or creationism? Intelligent design? As parents have said to me, you know, I heard Steiner said there's no such thing as dinosaurs, or didn't Steiner say that people and dinosaurs were on the Earth at the same time? I mean, how old does Steiner think the Earth is? What about Darwin? Was Steiner against him, or what? Did he relate to him? Did he know he existed? Questions like this will come up. If they don't come up, then it might even be good for you to raise them yourself so that the parents have the feeling that you're not just an expert on fairy tales and ancient myths, but that you also understand something of modern scientific issues, controversies, of the sort of thing that swirls around schools all over the place. You know, there are some states in which creationism and evolution are really there as matters of regulation and law and so on. Your school may be in such a state, and you're going to have to really be aware of what's there in the general educational milieu from which some of the children in your class may have just come. Maybe you have a new fourth grader. Maybe you have parents who are new, who haven't learned yet to be discreet and not ask the teacher too many embarrassing questions. So I would say, be ready to answer this. Here's the question. I'll ask it again. In the Waldorf schools, when we're teaching about the animals, are we teaching about animals from the viewpoint of Darwinian evolution and its modern antecedents? Are we rather teaching the children from the vantage point of creationism? Are we working with a kind of loose hybrid, which still basically is creationism in yet another form, intelligent design? So, you know, if those terms are a little bit vague to you, it would be good perhaps to go onto Wikipedia at least and do some research about what they mean. And then to read, you know, what you're meant to do by, again, Lecture 7, Practical Advice to Teachers. Where is Steiner apparently coming from? Well, let me give you some thoughts about this. And here I would say, as background reading, nothing can substitute for Rudolf Steiner's famous book, Occult Science, which is like his great encyclopedia of anthroposophy, or many of the lecture cycles that he gave circa 1908 to 1912 at the Gates of Spiritual Science and Theosophy of the Rosicrucian, where he gave in lecture form the salient points that he had raised in occult science. You can also, again, if you want to go still more deeply into this, scroll down in the table of contents or click on the icon that says Steiner Course, and there you will see lectures that I have given about the various stages of Earth evolution, based, of course, on Steiner's picture of this. But to give you yet another, even more condensed version of this, one that will help you particularly with this block, you can just say that Steiner speaks of these rhythmical kind of breathing, in-breathing, out-breathing processes of Earth evolution, and he uses the word evolution, in which the Earth is created in such a way that it is constantly densifying until finally we come from something that's much more cosmic and much more immaterial to the very material, densified, physical, mineral-filled earth that we have today. So Steiner uses the word evolution again and again. Was he familiar with Darwin? Yes, he was. How much he had read of Darwin himself, I cannot tell you, but I can tell you that he was, as a young man, a tremendous admirer, almost felt himself to be a kind of acolyte of the great German biologist Friedrich Haeckel. And Haeckel was Darwin's greatest proponent on the continent of Europe, especially, of course, among the German-speaking people. And we have no idea of how influential German science and German scientists were in the intellectual atmosphere of the late 19th and early 20th century. It wasn't until World War II that the German scientists lost the prestige that they had had for well over a century. So Haeckel's allegiance to Darwin and Haeckel's presentations of Darwin in live lectures and in his books, along with Haeckel's incredibly meticulous work in embryology, which interested Steiner more than anything, all of this led Steiner to a passionate interest in Darwinian evolution. So you can tell this to the parents, that Steiner knew a whole lot more about evolution and Darwin's approach via Haeckel than probably most of the parents in your class do, unless they happen to be biologists. So that's important. He penetrated Darwinian evolution deeply, and he was most interested in Haeckel's research, which was absolutely epochal research, and which was one of the great foundations on which Darwinian evolution then grew better known and more popular. Haeckel was able to examine human fetuses, human embryos, from day one, and to carefully draw them, to draw his observations. So the art of anatomy was still not photographic in those days, and Haeckel was an incredible draftsman. His book, Art Forms in Nature, has remained in print for over 100 years and shows you his gifts in delineating the finest details in biology. So Haeckel was able basically to track what the embryo and fetus look like every single day in gestation and do careful renditions of this. And what he discovered was that the human being begins as a unicellular and then quickly bicellular organism, very much like the stage of the very earliest forms of life in the cosmic soup that started the biological ball rolling on the earth, and then develops in such a way that the fetus looks something very fish-like, with gills, and of course it doesn't have its own independent source of blood. The warmth is all around it in the mother's womb. And then it goes on to look very much like a little reptile. And then it moves and looks more like the fetus of a bird. And then it starts to take on qualities that look a bit mammalian, like a very low level of mammal. And then it starts to look like a higher mammal. And then it starts to look ape-like. And then it starts to look right at the very end, different from all of that, like a human being. And with this, Haeckel laid down one of the great principles of biology, which is ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. And this, we could say, is actually a principle that on certain levels underlies Waldorf education. And it certainly is one that underlies Rudolf Steiner's picture not only of Earth evolution, but the evolution and development of the human being as well. Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. You could look those words up in the dictionary, but basically what it means is that the unfolding, the development, the biological development of the human being recapitulates the entire evolution of humanity altogether. And as far as Haeckel was concerned, what you see in the womb is what went on the earth. A long, long, long time ago, there were just unicellular organisms. Then there was a way of them building up into more complex microorganisms and then macroorganisms. And then there were fish in the sea, and then the fish somehow made their way to land, reptilian creatures taking on qualities that were different from the fish, being able to breathe air as well as live in water. And then we come finally to the birds with independent body warmth, the mammals, which carry their unborn within rather than laying the eggs in the outer world. And finally, then, the last step, what was once called the crown of creation, the human being. So for Haeckel, our fetal existence proved evolution, and it proved his rule. And this was a tremendous support for Darwinian evolution. You know, Haeckel probably won more people over to evolution than Darwin himself. And Steiner was one who was very, very deeply engaged in it. But for Steiner, he looked at these diagrams, these wonderful drawings that Haeckel had done. He read Haeckel's research. He looked at Haeckel's conclusions, and he said, what he sees is correct. The perceptions are absolutely correct. But his conclusions are actually the opposite of what was really going on. And what was really going on in Steiner's worldview is exactly what would lead him then to begin the course of natural science in grade 4 with zoology. So what Rudolf Steiner saw was, yes, Haeckel is looking at the physical manifestation of the development of the embryonic and fetal human being. If that's all there was to it, then indeed one could say this proves Darwinian evolution. But what if what he is seeing is only that which is dropping out of the spiritual world? What we could say, like a precipitate, is coming into form, kind of crystallizing out in the liquid. But in that liquid, there is still plenty more of that salt that's dissolved. He'd say that there's a lot going on in the world of soul and spirit that is not going to precipitate at that given moment. That these are things, in a way, being pushed out, pushed away, dropped off, excluded, rejected from the human soul that is incarnating in this process of embryonic and fetal development, in that gestation period in the mother's womb. That first, all of these other forms have to be rejected, pushed out, because they are not suitable for the human being. And then finally, only at the moment of birth, when the umbilical cord is severed, when the child breathes the first breath, which is, of course, where the third grade creation story begins, with that first breath, that is when the human being arrives. Before that, it was just all kinds of foundational stuff no longer needed, like a snake shedding its skin again and again so that it could grow. Very, very different picture. In other words, Rudolf Steiner is saying that if we are able to look at the mother's womb clairvoyantly, which means more than with x-rays or CAT scans or anything like that, if we are really looking at that womb in the right way, we will understand that the perfectly formed human being is already there, but not in physical form. The perfectly formed human being is living in the mother's etheric body, hovering around her and pressing off those parts of its nature that it no longer needs, until finally, we might say, like Michelangelo, cutting away at the rough stone of the matrix to find his David or his Pietà. That's exactly what the human being is doing. So in the next lecture, I want to go even further back than the human fetal development and talk about the evolutionary aspect of this in a more macrocosmic way that again lies at the foundation of this picture of Steiner's, having to do with the rejection of form rather than the living through these forms and developing to something higher and higher. So with Steiner's picture, the higher is the beginning. And finally, only in the end of that development is there the form that is capable of fully incarnating that higher being, that human being. Let's see how Steiner looked at this from another vantage point.